Welcome into The Jump. I'm George Sedano, in for our fearless leader, Rachel Nichols. Today, I'm joined by our senior writer, Ramona Shelburne, right here, and of course, NBA reporter, Malika Andrews. So, coming up, Draymond Green's tweets on women receiving equal pay in sports drew some criticism from Megan Rapinoe. We've got Draymond's response. You're going to want to hear that. We'll react to that. But first, Paul George is, man, on a tear right now, and he's also one of the most polarizing players in the NBA. The seven-time All-Star is also one of the league's most talented players. He showed that once again last night, scoring a game-high 33 points against the Suns in a battle of Western Conference elites. After the game, he mentioned how the Suns were trash-talking all game. Let's take a listen to PG.
We focused on us. I don't know what that chirp is about. We focus on us. I don't care what they're doing over there. I don't care who they are, what they're doing. I'm locked in. They can do the chirping. I let them have it tonight. I just stayed in my zone, stayed in my place. I don't know. I don't know. Again, I don't care what they're doing. We're focused on us over here. We're focused on getting better. Tonight was a fun matchup. We appreciate the challenge.
Here's how PG is performing against the Suns this season. 36 points per game on, get this, 63% from the field, 74 from three, and 100 from the line. Those are incredible splits. Ramona, if that doesn't get the chirping to stop, then what the heck will it take?
Oh, it's never going to stop. Because the reason they're chirping at him, the reason they're trying to get under his skin, is because there has been evidence that it has worked sometimes. Right? So the only way to stop that is to just play through it. And Paul knows his rep in the league now. He knows what teams are trying to do to him. But by the way, any team with Chris Paul on it, that's kind of like in their DNA.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Chris Paul the other day, right, in the overtime game. He was trying to high-five Donovan Mitchell.
Yep.
But this is what Paul George does. I mean, they're going to keep doing this to you, Paul, until you win. And the only way you can shut them up is to just keep doing what you're doing.
Yep, that is absolutely right. That's the only time that this is going to stop is when they win a ring. And that's probably how it should be, right? Because when you look at what happened with the Clippers last year, they fell short of a lot of people's, including their own expectations. When something like that happens, plus what Ramona mentioned, that combined history of perhaps being able to have that work a little bit, it's not going to stop. And also, why should it stop? We want to see this. This is what NBA fans want to see. They want a little bit of back and forth. It's entertaining. It's fun, but that's exactly what Paul George should be saying. I'm going to let them do the chirping because they still, as amazing as those numbers are, I believe the Clippers know that they still have something to prove after what happened last year. So you're not going to see them being out there being the person who's hitting first, right? They are going to be focusing in on what they need to do because they remember, they know what happened.
You know what's fascinating to me is, and Ramona, you probably were there too, but I remember covering those LeBron, Wade, Bosh teams, and they played the Pacers three times, okay? Once in the conference semis, twice in the conference finals. And Paul George was their best player. And we looked at him and said, my God, this kid is going to be incredible. He has the tragic injury. He comes back from the injury. And look, it took him a little bit. He has built his game back up. Like, his game is still incredible, especially when you consider the type of injury he's dealt with. I understand the playoff part of this, but I feel like he is this close to just breaking through. If he just can have those playoff performances that we saw 7 or 8 years ago, Ramona, I think that all this stuff will be dispelled.
Well, here's the thing about Paul. He's playing with an injured toe right now. And the only way that toe is going to get better is to rest. But they can't rest. And so he's out there playing night in and night out. And I think now they have one of the easiest schedules going forward in this last 20-something games of the year. He may take a few games here to rest that toe as much as he can just to be ready for the playoffs. But he's been great. And the only way you clap back at people who are trying to get under your skin is to just go out and play. I don't even like that he acknowledged that they were chirping. I know that was the question that was asked of him, and so he gave it an expansive answer. But to me, Paul George, like, just ignore it. Don't even make it a thing. Like, the idea that we're even talking about it means it's a thing.
Well, but don't you think, and I'll ask you, Malika, don't you think that stuff can fuel someone? Like, everyone's made up differently mentally. Maybe that's what he needs.
Sure, maybe. I mean, it's always easy to get emotional when someone is bringing their emotions at you. I believe, you know, he answered the question that he was asked, like Ramona said, but focusing on what they need to do, as I'm in New York City, so everything's loud, but focusing on what they need to do, that's exactly what they should be doing right now, because I know we don't want to overplay what happened in the playoffs last year. A lot of first-year teams, just based on the fact that they don't have expansive history together, fall short of their ultimate goal of winning the title. But Paul George came out and said, a lot of that was on me. I wasn't quite right. I got to where I needed to be mentally. So if this is working for him right now, keep going, because clearly something's going right if he can continue to shoot and play the way that he has,
and
Paul George.
Malika, keep going. Don't worry about the sound outside your window. It's okay. It's 2021. We all know what's going on. All right, let's get to
rolling with it.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get to Draymond Green, who has been the subject of controversy after his Twitter thread. That wasn't actually a Twitter thread from March 27th, which in part, he blamed women for making quote-unquote complaints rather than taking action over disparities in pay and investment in women's sports. Those comments drew the attention from the soccer world, where U.S. women's national team star Megan Rapinoe said that Draymond, quote, showed his whole ass in not even understanding the struggles of equal pay for women, and that it was unfortunate that an athlete in Green's position didn't have a more informed opinion. Green responded to Rapinoe and others yesterday. Let's take a listen.
You know, I saw what Megan Rapinoe said, you know, and she said it's unfortunate of his view, that's his view. And, you know, I think it's unfortunate that she thinks it's unfortunate that that's my view, because at the end of the day, what Megan wants and what I want is the same thing. If we can both do something to move the needle to get to the end goal, great. I have no complaints with whatever it is that she wants to do or any woman athlete wants to do, or anyone that's trying to help drive their cause and what they want to be done. It doesn't really matter to me how you get there. What does matter to me is that we get there. And so, you know, I'm not going to sit here and condemn her comments back to me or what she's done. I'm in full support of what she's doing.
Malika, what's your reaction?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not going to pretend that I know Draymond incredibly well, but in the conversations that we have had, I believe that he genuinely wants to see change. I think he is coming from a good place. He just said that at the end of the day, he and Megan Rapinoe want the same thing. But inherently, the problem here, George, is that we're sitting up here talking about Megan Rapinoe versus Draymond Green, and that's taking away from what we should be talking about, which is equal pay. Here's the thing. This cannot be done. It is not on the oppressed to fix oppression. It has to be done with allyship, which is where someone like Draymond Green, a man, comes into a space that affects predominantly women. But the thing about being an ally is when you come into that space, you should be listening first, not talking first, because there is no one who understands better what these women are going through than these women. If you come into this space and say, okay, I'm going to listen, I'm going to take this feedback of what you've been living and what you've been experiencing, and then I'm going to then talk and then offer my ideas, perhaps even away from Twitter, because then it comes off like you're talking at somebody who's been going through something that's incredibly difficult for years and years and years, then maybe we can get to the point where women aren't making 80 cents to every dollar that a man makes. And by the way, that's white women. But we need to be listening first if you're coming into a space as an ally. We shouldn't even be talking about Draymond Green. The fact that we are, that's a distraction from what Megan Rapinoe is saying.
So, you know, Malika, you and I have had many conversations about this in the past or through text, whatever. Sometimes when you tweet something, you get so many reactions right away. And initially you think, did you even take the time to read the story? Or did you just see the tweet or the headline? Okay. And when I saw Draymond's tweets, I actually believe that he is on Rapinoe's side.
Right.
I do think I think his heart's in the right place. But I feel like he was watching the NCAA tournament. He had a gut level reaction. Mm-hmm. And instead of just catching up, he reacted.
Right.
And started tweeting, which is what people do on Twitter. Okay. Yeah. This is what they do on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Now, LeBron James is really good at getting asked a question. He says, you know what, I'm going to take some time and study that before I give you an answer.
Right.
I want to dig in and know what I'm talking about before I start popping up. It's good to be able to give hot takes. It's good to wade into things. I'm glad that he cares. But as somebody who has written a lot about women's sports
too.
In the past, and I could name some
right.
of them.
And you played Division
okay?
One.
Played yeah, Division sports. One softball. But yeah. look, I write a lot about the WNBA.
Right.
I've written about the Sparks all my entire career that I've been in Los Angeles. There's a lady named Michelle Vopel. She's incredible. She's been writing about women's basketball for ESPN for decades. She's great. Holly Rowe, did you hear that report she gave on Adia Barnes having to go in there at halftime
so
with the coach at Arizona, pump breast milk for her infant child, and then go back out and coach the national championship game? That's the kind of story that draws people into women's sports, and they are out there. Draymond just hasn't seen them. He hasn't gone looking for them. And I think that is what Megan and all the women athletes who have reacted to this have essentially said, which is, hey, these stories are out there. You just haven't been reading them. Go read them and then come talk to us.
I couldn't have said any of that better than you guys, obviously. But what I would say to you guys is this, and you guys both alluded to this about Twitter specifically. Herm Edwards worked at this network for a long time, okay? And he had one thing always to say. Don't press send, okay? Think about what you're going to write before you put it out there, right? Like, and I think that you guys both alluded to that. And Herm, if you're watching, I still live by it, okay? I still live by it. I don't press send because
you
gotta know what you're talking about, because if not, you're going to get the response that you got if you're Draymond Green. I do think Draymond Green absolutely is on the side.
This story happened in the reverse order it should have.
Yes.
Draymond became interested in the tournament.
Yeah.
Draymond tweeted about the tournament without really knowing a lot of what he needs to know.
So
now he knows what he needs to know because he heard Megan Rapinoe, he heard Chinua Achebe, he heard a lot of women athletes who have jumped in here and said, hey, know what to do, okay? So now he knows, and he gave a very nice, contrite press conference yesterday, and I believe him.
Momo, what needs to happen now? With Draymond, do you reach out to Megan? Like, how do you make this work?
You know what? I think everyone's okay. I think we all had the same reaction. If you notice the way the story played out, the first day he started tweeting about it, everybody kind of just was soft playing it. They didn't necessarily have this gut level emotional reaction. Then he kind of doubled down on it and doubled down again.
Right. He tweeted
and
a lot.
And it kept going. Mm-hmm. And we were like, hey, somebody should get in your ear and tell you what's up.
Right.
And now that they have, and I think there's some really good public relations people up there in Golden State that have worked in both the NBA and the WNBA.
Right.
I want to give them credit. That have
some of the best
talked to him about it. And he understands now. So it would have been better if all that would have happened beforehand. But the fact that we've spent, 3 weeks now talking about this?
Yeah. March 27th was a long time ago.
Yeah. It's probably a net positive because a lot of people learned along with Draymond.
All right. Fair enough. Hopefully that is the case. But coming up next, what do the Nets plan to do as they ramp up Kevin Durant, his activity with the playoffs getting closer? We'll get to Malika with that. She'll fill us in. All right. Let's talk about the Brooklyn Nets. After missing 23 games with a hamstring injury, Kevin Durant came off the bench for only the second time in his career on Wednesday to drop a cool 17 points in just 19 minutes, where he was perfect from the field. So the Nets ended up routing the Pels and are currently a half game up on Philly for the top spot in the East. So let's take a look at KD and his absurd effectiveness when he's been healthy this season. Look at that. That's just crazy. So Malika, what's the Nets' plan here to get KD back to full strength?
Well, they were very cautious in bringing him back from his rehab into games, and they were slowly ramping him up, George. They're now going to be applying that same ramp-up kind of technique in games. So Kevin Durant told me that the reason why he came off the bench is that he is on a minutes restriction. He's going to be on a minutes restriction for the next couple of days, he said. And he also said that I'm going to be playing these weird minutes and in these weird rotations before I'm getting back to what you would normally see my workload at. But the reason why they didn't just bring him off the bench, he didn't play the entire first quarter and the first several minutes of the second quarter. They wanted to make sure that if they needed him in a close contest down the stretch, they wouldn't have burned all of his minutes. Because as you said, they're only a half game up on Philadelphia. They know what's going on and what this stretch of the season means to them. They're eyeing those standings. They want the number one seed, even if they don't talk about it publicly all the time. This is a team that hasn't shied away from the fact that they want to win. And so for the next few games, Kevin Durant is still going to be on a minutes restriction. He's still going to be playing in a different role maybe than he would normally play, but that's intentional so that they can make sure that they have him available if they get in a tight spot late in games.
That's an excellent point about not starting him so that he can be there at the end. Because I feel like I've done this show so many times where a star player is on a minutes restriction. They are not able to play in the fourth quarter or in overtime. Right. We go, did the coach make a mistake? Should they have left him in there? Right? Yeah. Should they have ignored the minutes restriction? It's happened a few times with Zion last year.
Oh, my God. Well, all we did was talk about that
all
with Zion.
All we did. Yeah. And that is a sophisticated way of approaching the minutes restriction, Brooklyn. You know, Malika, I thought your report during the game where, like, he's not there because he needed more space on the sideline to warm up. That's I mean, that was crazy watching that game going, like, when is he coming in?
Yeah.
When is Kevin Durant? Is he going to play? I mean, they really had a good poker face about if he was going to start, how many minutes he was going to play. Like, that was – and I think it's easier to do in the non-in-person media access world. But obviously, this is what the standard is going to be for the Brooklyn Nets with all of their injured players because – they've kind of entrusted it to the player all year long, you know, in the beginning with Kevin coming back, played a lot of minutes coming off that Achilles. Same thing with him and James when they had the hamstring injury. They played pretty quickly afterwards, both re-injured it. Now the Brooklyn Nets are taking that Spursian view of things.
Sure, sure. Now let me ask you this, because, look, clearly this Nets team has more firepower than the team I'm going to talk about. But last year, the Clippers, right?
Yeah.
We talked a lot about they only played 12 games together, right? And then in the playoffs, it'll work itself out. They'll figure it out. And it didn't happen. So, Ramona, how worried are you about the whole they haven't played enough games together thing?
Yeah, you know, there was a stat last night going around that they only played 7 games together, right? The only team that's won a championship where their top 2 players played with the fewest amount of games that they played together was 10.
Right.
Okay, 10, or the top 3 players was 10. So they need to get some on-court time, but these guys are so good.
Yeah.
And we forget, like, they have been playing together. They play Team USA together. They know each other's games. They sort of play a position style of basketball. They're still experimenting with things. And the Eastern Conference is a place where the top 3 teams are here and everybody else is down here. I think they're going to be able to have some time to figure this out on the fly in the playoffs as long as they're all healthy.
So you're saying the conference is the biggest difference. Okay. Yeah. Malika?
Well, and that's something that the Nets have said. Steve Nash has said to me, ideally, in an ideal world, we would have been playing all season long together. If some first-year teams don't win, sometimes it's for no reason other than the fact that they haven't been battle-tested together as a group. And so he's acutely aware of that. He knows that at this point it's sort of like we're going to have to deal with what we're going to have to deal with because this is the hand that we've been dealt. I asked Kevin Durant about this after last game, and he said that he's pretty confident just based on the way that these guys all play, the fact that he said, you know, we're all, like Ramona said, we're positionless players. We're going to be able to build chemistry quickly. James Harden is very key to that. But the thing about that 7 games is, remember, one of them was that strange game against Toronto where Kevin Durant was in the game, then out of the game, then in the game and out of the game. That's like 6.5 games. And then also that was before LaMarcus Aldridge was added. That was before Blake Griffin was added. And we know that they are seeing a lot of minutes. They're key players right now. DeAndre Jordan is not currently playing for Brooklyn. LaMarcus Aldridge has come in for those minutes. So they're going to need some time. They've talked about that, especially because this is a team that doesn't really practice. They're learning together on the court. It's something that's in Steve Nash's mind. It's something that he said he wouldn't be concerned about. And I think that they've earned the benefit of the doubt here because of the firepower they have, because they've been able to answer most, if not all questions thus far. They probably deserve saying, okay, they're going to have some time to figure this out. They're probably going to figure this out. But in an ideal world, it wouldn't have come down to this.
It's going to be fascinating. Certainly something to keep an eye on for sure. And we'll all do that. Malika, thank you for hanging out with us today. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right. Coming up after the break, we've got the latest on Victor Oladipo and his early exit versus the Lakers yesterday. Don't go anywhere. You're watching The Jump. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano in for Rachel Nichols, still joined by Ramona Shelburne. And now we say hello to our guy, ESPN writer for the undefeated,
hey,
Mark Spears. Spears, what up, man?
What's happening?
All good.
Oh, man, just trying to figure out the world.
I feel you, no doubt. All right, it's time for another installment of everyone's favorite game, Something, Nothing, or Everything. First up, we have Victor Oladipo He left last night's game against the Lakers in the fourth quarter. You can see Oladipo hurt himself on the way up and then gingerly came down holding his knee. Victor will have his right knee evaluated Friday today, according to Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald. So, Mark, is Victor's knee injury something, nothing, or everything?
Well, initially, I thought it was everything. It's not every day that you see a player get hurt and then basically go straight to the locker room. Seeing how gingerly he landed was certainly a scary scene. But after the game, apparently he was congratulating teammates. And Bam Adebayo also said that he was in good spirits and expected him to be okay. So maybe it's just a little something.
Yeah, George, I thought I was the same. You and I were texting about it last night because it's a non-contact injury. That's the same leg that he hurt. That's the same quad that he ruptured, and that's that right side. So I didn't like the looks of it, especially on a non-contact injury. But as Mark said last night, he gave his teammates a little sign of encouragement. And this morning when I've made some calls and checking on it, like I have the same encouraging signs. And we'll wait for the official report here. But just in checking with folks in Miami and close to Vic, it seems like things are going to be okay. It's not going to be serious.
Yeah, I think it's something, too, though, because, yeah. Again, you know, once you've had one of those injuries, you're always wondering, right? Like the kinetic chain can be broken if it's been broken once. The biggest predictor of future injury is past injury, right? So, yeah, I think that for Victor's sake and for the Heat's sake, you want everyone to hopefully be on the same page and give him the rest he may need, right? Maybe he's back and ready to roll soon. Hopefully that is the case. If not, just give him a couple days off. So, all right. Next, we spoke at length about Draymond's comments pertaining to equal pay for women's sports, but he wasn't done talking. While a guest on KD's ETC's podcast, Draymond said this about the young NBA players in today's game.
I think from a talent standpoint, the league is in a good space, you know what I'm saying? But as pure basketball lovers, you know what I'm saying, who love competition and like to see everybody competing at the highest level, I think they got to catch up in that department. They soft as hell. Man, I found myself this year trying to talk to some of these young dudes that won't talk. And they like trying to be a friend.
Yeah.
But that's what these young dudes do nowadays, man. I don't understand it.
So, Ramona, is Draymond criticizing young players' competitiveness something, nothing, or everything?
I'm actually going to say it's everything, and I agree with him. I'm sorry. Like, that podcast was great. Okay, by the way, there's a lot in there. You should listen to it if you get a chance.
Okay.
There is a quality of Draymond and KD being like the old heads, right? Like, and they're kind of saying like, okay, back in my day, right? There was some of that.
Right. Okay. I'm queuing up the podcast, by the way. I'm ready to roll.
Mark, you know this, and we talk to these guys. I do see a generational divide. I do think it's like the social media era, and there's a reality that's created on social media of Instagram, Twitter. Like, sometimes the illusion of reality becomes the reality, but the truth is what matters is what happens on the court. What matters is what you do on the court, what you win and accomplish on the court. And I don't know how many people could actually take a Draymond trash talking. There's not many in this league that could weather that.
Yeah.
But to me, there is something to it. And they made a point to not paint everybody with the same broad brush. Okay. There are some young players they called. I think they said John Morant's good. You know, he's.
Yeah.
Okay. There's some young players. But that point about the social media and making that seem more important than actually winning games, that is something. And I know it's coaches are struggling with this. How do you connect with players who grew up completely differently than you? Front offices are, agents, everybody that we talk to in this business is having this whole, we got to learn how to talk to the young guys, right?
Mark?
Well, I think it's everything. We got to remember, like, Draymond Green came into the league 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. So for most of these young guys, they were in junior high, and they've been following him trash talk this whole time. It has to be really, really intimidating to be some young dude to come in to talk to a guy with a quick tongue like that. I play dominoes with this dude. This dude trash talks in dominoes. He's got a quick mind. He's very funny. And he loves it. So I think it's an intimidation thing more than anything. I know Anthony Edwards tried, but, you know, didn't completely succeed. But I think as more these young guys get more and more seasoned and more confidence, they might try it with Draymond Green.
That's also how you go from being a second-round pick to being an all-star and a three-time champ.
Yeah.
All right? Oh, not only was he a second-round pick, he was coming off the bench in summer league.
Right.
So, I mean, for him to go from making $800,000 to $16 million, Talk your talk, Draymond.
Yeah, and I'm with Mark. I think it is more of an intimidation thing more than anything else. I think it's just he's a larger-than-life figure in a lot of ways, and you don't want to mess with him because you know he'll clap back, right? Like, you don't want to mess with that, so I get it. All right, coming up next, speaking of young guys, University of Arkansas standout guard Moses Moody joins us here on The Jump to discuss the Razorbacks' Elite Eight run and to announce what's next for him in his basketball journey.
Moses Moody, one of the best across the country.
That kid brings it.
This young man is thinking buckets.
Well, how smooth is Moses Moody?
Yeah, that looks easy, doesn't it?
Terrific with his hands on defense, even better with his hands on the offensive end.
From the corner, there's a three.
Moody, he's got another one. That's such a pretty shot.
The run out, Moody with a dunk.
He is a difference maker, is what he is.
All right, you saw his highlights, and here he is, Arkansas guard Moses Moody joins us here on The Jump, averaged 17 a game in the tourney. Welcome to the show, young man.
Oh, good. Glad to be here.
Yes, sir. Now, I understand you have an announcement you'd like to make, so please share that with us.
Yeah, I mean, after a great year, after a great run at the University of Arkansas, I'm glad I could be a part of restoring the winning tradition in my hometown. And I would like to hire an agent and enter my name into this 2021 NBA draft.
Well, Moses, man, congratulations to you and your parents. And I know everybody's excited. World permitting, if you were able to go into the NBA venues and work out for teams, what do you want to show them on the court that you could bring? And also, what do you want them to know about you off the court?
Yeah, I mean, I trust that they do a deep, thorough evaluation on my game on the court because, I mean, they're able to see that day in and day out. But, I mean, I got a lot to show off the court just personality-wise, and I think I could be a great guy in any huddle, any locker room, and just around various teams and groups of people.
Yo, Moses, you did a lot in your season there at Arkansas. Great regular season, third leading scorer in the SEC. Talk to me about the tournament run that you guys made, all the way to the Elite Eight. I know it didn't end the way you wanted it to against Baylor, but you lost to the eventual champs. Like, what did you learn from that run to all the way to the Elite Eight?
Yeah, I mean, me being a young guy on the team, we had some older guys that had been in the tournament, that's played in the tournament. And in the beginning, they just stressed, and my coaching staff stressed how hard it is to win games in the tournament. And we just stepped up to the challenge, and we were able to do that at a great rate. And we made it all the way to the Elite Eight, which is a great accomplishment. And then that, like I said, that's just sparking to restore the winning tradition in Arkansas. Because, I mean, we made it all the way to the end in the past, and I feel like we'll be able to do it again in the future.
You mentioned that coaching staff, your coach Eric Musselman, obviously coached in the NBA, and you also played for Bradley Beal's AAU team. What was that experience like for you as a youngster?
Yeah, I mean, as a young guy, you know, Bradley Beal, NBA All-Star, leading scorer, just a guy like that in the locker room. Because, you know, it's a lot of times where guys might have a team, they only show up when the camera's on. But nah, Brad was there every practice, on the sideline, every game, and lighting into us after a loss. He just was very emotional and passionate and shared that with us.
Now, let me ask you this. What's it going to be like when you have to face him on an NBA court?
I mean, it's going to be one of those surreal experiences when one of your idols become your rival. And I'm willing to step up to the challenge, and I've done it various times in practice where we play one-on-one after practice, or I'm guarding them in the gym. So, you know, it's just time to do that on a bigger scale.
Moses, congratulations, man. Thank you so much.
Moses.
Best of luck throughout the draft process. And, man, thank you again for joining us here. We'll be talking about
you
very, very soon.
Man.
Let's go.
Congrats. Yes, we'll see
thank you for having me.
All right, man. Take care.
All right.
Yes, sir. It's crunch time here on The Jump. The Mavs got 26-17 out of Kristaps Porzingis, and it was on a back-to-back. Ramona, We call this man the unicorn. Mm. Why don't we see this all the time from
him? Okay, so you see those two highlights that you just showed? That's the Mavs getting him the ball. And the other night when they lost to Houston, he complained about it because he didn't get any touches in the fourth quarter. And Rick Carlisle said, okay, yeah, when we lose, we're going to talk about that. So they made an effort to get him involved early, which is what he asked for. Look at Luka, he's trying to find him, okay? So when you get the big guys involved, they tend to perform better. That's why we haven't seen it all the time, though, because not always the best at that.
Well, he's also not always available, right, Mark?
True.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly the quintessential box of chocolate player, man. You never know what you're going to get from him. One night he'll have 26, one night he'll have 12, and then he'll have a good night, and then he'll complain about his touches. There's always ego issues with him. I think we got to keep an eye on him and Doncic and, you know, whether they get along or not. But, you know, it's certainly been I guess curious to say the least, because this is a guy that should have been a superstar, an all-star a long time ago, and he just teases you and then disappoints you. So I've never been all on it and even calling him the unicorn.
Was he trying to hit you up right there? Because I saw somebody was calling you there.
No, man, that was Matt Tumbleson from the Thunder, man. He was trying to call me. I thought my Do Not Disturb was on.
Come on, Matt Tumbleson. We love you down there in OKC.
He's doing one of the best PR guys.
One of the best PR guys. Come on.
You know what? Mark brings it up with the ego and some of that. And that has been the knock on Porzingis for a little while. The Knicks had a little issue there, too. But I think what they're working through there in Dallas is he's just got to be the clear number two. Mm-hmm. He has got to be the clear number two day in and day out. One, he has to be on the court, can't get injured. Yeah. Two, you have to keep him involved. And this has been the story with big guys for time, especially in this era, where in Dallas, the best way for him to contribute to that team is to be a floor spacer.
Right.
He's great out there, but like a lot of big men, they like to get the ball on the post. They like to show off their post moves all the way back to the Dwight Howard years here in Los Angeles. I've been covering big men who have not liked that role when you just say, hey, all we need you to do is rebound and play defense and occasionally shoot a three. Like, this is what the Mavs are trying to solve here, and that's why you've seen him traded from New York to Dallas. You heard some trade rumors this year. Until he proves he can do it every night and be that clear number two to Luka, we're going to keep talking about it.
A wise man once said the best ability is availability. Ooh. So we'll see. All right. On his podcast, The Old Man and the Three, J.J. Redick said he will practice with the Mavs for the first time on Saturday. He expects to be ready to play in a couple of games. So, Mark, how much can J.J. help the Mavs at this stage of his career?
Oh, I mean, when you have a shooter like that, one of the deadliest shooters the game's seen, he's always going to help you. And him and Doncic on the court at the same time, anybody that could help make life easier for Doncic and take defenses maybe off of him a little bit is certainly a godsend. So I definitely like his addition, even though J.J. may not be too happy about being in Dallas.
Well, look, we were just talking about this with Porzingis. They need floor spacers. This is what J.J. Redick does, especially at this stage of his career. Plus, you know, this is a young team that is trying to break through. They've actually had a nice run here. That loss to Houston the other night might come back to hurt them. I mean, we're going to be talking about that if they end up into the playoff tournament or the play-in tournament, depending on where they fall in the seedings there. But J.J. is a guy who's been there in the playoffs. He's had success in the playoffs, and that's why they went out and got him, you know, maybe much to his chagrin.
All right, the Lakers will raise their championship banner on May 12th. That's the last home game of the season. They wanted to have fans in the building for this, obviously. And starting next week, the Lakers will welcome back their first home crowd. So, Ramona, will having the fans back at Staples Center make a difference for these guys?
I'm telling you, I have talked to a lot of players in the league, and especially here on the Lakers. Like, this is a big issue for them, having fans in that court, because they have had, they in some ways play better on the road when there are certain arenas in the league that have had fans. They're really looking forward to that. It's strange for me being in LA, like the Lakers and the Dodgers won championships, but if you win a championship in the middle of a pandemic and no one's there to celebrate it, did it really happen? I mean,
it happened.
It's so weird. I mean, like, are they going to have a parade? I mean, at least they get the banner up before the start of the next playoffs, but I'm happy for the Lakers and the fans here in Los Angeles that they at least get to do this before the next playoffs start.
Well, I wish it was next Thursday when they allow fans back into the Staples Center.
Yep.
But, you know, LeBron and AD may not be back then, so it's probably very smart to wait to the end of the season. And, you know, that's a good game or a game with guys sitting out that you need to sell tickets. So from a business standpoint, I get it.
All right, quickly here. Tomorrow, Lakers face the Nets in Brooklyn at 8:30 Eastern on ABC. Ramona, tomorrow's game, who is it more important for? Quickly, we got 10 seconds here. Lakers or Nets?
The Lakers just trying to get home in one piece at this point. Nets need to win this because they're right contending for the top spot in the East.
Mark?
Nah, Ramona, it's the Lakers. They need it. They got to stay away from Portland and Dallas and help make it easier for LeBron and Anthony when they come back.
Yeah, they are 4-6 without LeBron and AD. 4-7 puts them closer to that dreaded range. So thanks for watching The Jump. We'll be back on Monday. You guys have a great weekend. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Ramona. Thank you to Malika.